From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, August 29th, 2025. Good evening. With this look at Maine news, I'm Ari Snyder. The University of Maine system is on track for its sixth consecutive semester of year-over-year enrollment growth. Maddie Smith has more.
System officials say enrollment stands at more than 25,000 students across all campuses, the largest in 4 years. They say the numbers have been bolstered by a 50% increase in transfer students in the last 2 years. The University of Maine at Presque Isle saw the largest one-year growth, with almost 400 more students. Both the flagship University of Maine campus in Orono and the University of Southern Maine saw slight enrollment decreases. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
Despite today's rain, drought conditions continue to expand in Maine. Now most of the state is at least abnormally dry. State climatologist Sean Burkell says that a warming atmosphere and hotter days are making typical short-term droughts more intense.
There's a greater likelihood that when dryness starts, that with higher temperatures overall, that will tend to exacerbate the conditions to further dry soils.
Burkell says the current dryness set in with remarkable speed. It took about a month for drought to spread across the state. Nearly 1.2 million people in Maine are living in drought conditions, leading to impacts on agriculture, freshwater, and increased fire danger. Maine Senator Susan Collins is accusing the Trump administration of attempting to undermine Congress and the law in its latest attempt to claw back billions of dollars from foreign aid programs. Kevin Miller reports.
The Trump administration is using what's known as a pocket rescission to do an end run around Congress by canceling $4.9 billion in foreign aid that the White House classified as, quote, woke, weaponized, and wasteful. The tactic hasn't been used in nearly 50 years, and Collins, a Republican who chairs the powerful Senate Appropriations Committee, expressed her strong opposition to the move. In a statement, Collins wrote that, quote, any effort to rescind appropriated funds without congressional approval is a clear violation of the law. Collins said that instead of attempting to undermine the law, the administration should work with her committee to reduce spending. In July, Collins was one of just two Republican senators to oppose a rescissions bill that clawed back $9 billion from foreign aid and public broadcasting. But Trump's use of a pocket rescission, which makes cuts without congressional approval, is likely to further inflame partisan tensions in D.C., and that's with a potential government shutdown looming in October. The pocket rescission is likely to be challenged in court. It was unclear Friday, however, how Collins' committee and the GOP-controlled Congress would proceed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
At the same time, Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry announced today that the Trump administration has agreed to release funding for AmeriCorps programs across the country, including $2.5 million earmarked for programs in Maine. Caitlin Bedion has more.
Maine and a coalition of other states filed suit against the administration in April, challenging cuts to AmeriCorps. In June, a federal judge ordered the funding restored, but the White House Office of Management and Budget continued to hold the $184 million. The states amended their lawsuit, again asking the court to release the funds. This week, rather than oppose the state's motion, the OMB informed the court it would release all funds to AmeriCorps programs as quickly as possible. Volunteer Maine, the state service commission, says the funds support 8 AmeriCorps projects around Maine and about 120 service members. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedion.
Mount Joseph Nursing Home in Waterville is being sued for abuse and neglect in the death of a 48-year-old man. As Patty White reports, the man's family alleges that his death was the result of a business strategy that underfunded the facility in order to enrich its owners and operators.
Daniel Cromit had cerebral palsy, a seizure disorder, and autism. He was admitted to Mount Joseph for what was supposed to be a temporary stay after he fell and fractured his hip in the summer of 2021. The lawsuit alleges that a nurse who was later convicted on criminal charges repeatedly failed to give Cromit anti-seizure medications, causing him to experience severe seizures and frequent falls. It says the nurse also pinned Cromit to the floor and drugged him with an unprescribed antipsychotic medication. His sister subsequently removed him to a hospital where he died, less than 6 months after he was admitted to Mount Joseph. The lawsuit accuses the facility and its corporate owners and managers of diverting revenue to affiliated businesses instead of ensuring adequate staffing, training, and oversight. The family is seeking unspecified damages. Mount Joseph didn't respond to requests for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Maine Turnpike officials say construction crews will not be working on the Maine Turnpike this Labor Day weekend, but are still urging travelers to be aware of narrower lanes and lane shifts on parts of the highway.
Up in Lewiston, Auburn, over the Androscoggin River, there's a traffic shift right there. So while crews will not be out working over the weekend, there is a traffic shift. It's a little different than what people might expect. We just ask people to take it slow. Don't be surprised if you see some brake lights ahead of you.
The Maine Department of Transportation also reports that there are lane shifts on I-295 due to construction in South Portland and Cumberland. People who are incarcerated are often paid notoriously low wages for prison work, but the expanded use of laptops is creating other opportunities. In Maine, 45 prisoners are currently working remote jobs for outside companies. A few are working full-time, earning more than corrections officers. One is making well into the six figures. In the second of two reports, Susan Sharon explains why Maine's approach to education and work in prison is making waves in the world of corrections.
Preston Thorpe is only 32, but he says he's already landed his dream job as a senior software engineer and bought a modest house with his six-figure salary. It was all accomplished by putting in long days from his cell at the Mountain View Correctional Center in Charleston.
It's not normal to have 15, 17 hours a day to really focus on something and learn something like deeply. And fortunately, tech is one of the few areas where they're not concerned with your college degree. They're really only concerned with your ability to write code.
A self-described computer geek, Thorpe says he built his first computer at age 13. In high school, he always expected he'd have a career in tech, but he also had a rebellious side. He got into trouble with drugs, using them and selling them. He says his parents kicked him out of the house, and he ended up in prison for the first time at age 20.
You know, I was worried and pretty hopeless that I had messed my life up so bad that it was no longer possible to have like a normal life, a normal career.
But then in 2019, he got transferred from the New Hampshire prison system to Maine, where he discovered laptops with limited internet access were available for education. That's when he says he had an epiphany that he could change himself by pursuing his passion. And about 2 years ago, he became one of the first incarcerated people in the country to get hired for a remote job.
Now I feel like my life has a purpose.
Preston is a rock star in our team. Everybody knows Preston.
Glauber Acosta is the CEO of Terso, an international database company that hired Thorpe for his second job in June. Acosta says he first took notice of Thorpe's contributions to an online public software project, but had no idea he was incarcerated. Once he spoke to Thorpe by video chat and discovered that he could be hired for remote work, Acosta figured the next hurdle would be the company background check. But since it only searches back 7 years, and since Thorpe has been in prison for more than a decade,
he is actually our cleanest background check. He doesn't have a parking ticket.
Several dozen other prisoners are also working remote jobs. At the Maine Correctional Center in Windham, Darlene George is a certified recovery coach, a scholar, and a teaching assistant who's serving a 40-year sentence for the murder of her husband.
I became incarcerated in 2009, and I've been here 16 years.
Unlike most women in prison, George had a college degree before she was incarcerated. She says she still tries to make the most of every opportunity she can. For the past 2 years, she's held a full-time remote job, first as a grant writer and now as a program coordinator for a Maine-based healthcare company.
The work, it really makes you feel good. Literally, when I'm putting my head down at night, I can say I'm giving something back.
George says she relishes her role as a decision maker and an advocate for clients' healthcare. She makes a competitive wage, and she says her boss and her coworkers are extremely supportive of her situation, and so are the other women at the Maine Correctional Center.
Literally, I work from my room. there's a sign that I put out that lets people know I'm Zooming, I'm in meetings. They try not to be noisy on the wall because they're like, well, we want a job too.
What I can tell you is that Maine is really a leader in this area. Their computer use policy, their remote work policy was the first one in the nation, actually.
Mara Sanchez is the program director at the Alliance for Higher Education in Prison.
Their implementation, willingness to try remote work for incarcerated students has really kind of set the bar for other states and been very inspiring to other states.
Maine Corrections Commissioner Randall Liberty says remote work is an outgrowth of expanded educational opportunities in prison. There are 800 residents who now have access to the internet.
We have technicians that are watching where they're going and what they're doing, and we've had very few problems. If it provides meaningful employment for them, it's really important that we allow that access. And it also allows for a smooth transition back into the community.
Wages are garnished for child support, victim restitution, and other fees. And for those who earn above a certain amount, 10% goes to the Department of Corrections for room and board. But residents can also save money or send it home. And Liberty says between educational programs and remote work, the prison environment is better for everyone.
We had 87 assaults on staff in 2017. Last year, we had 7 assaults on staff.
Liberty is optimistic that remote work can be expanded to other people in prison as the network of employers who understand their value grows.
I think that it can become the norm. This isn't a reckless attempt at finding work for individuals. This is a well-thought-out plan with lessons learned and consequences. If there's a violation, they lose their laptop. And the last thing that anybody wants is to lose their laptop.
Preston Thorpe would agree. He's hoping to be released sometime next year. He never expected to have started a successful career in prison or to have bought a house, but he says what he's most proud of is that after everything he's put his parents through, they are proud of him. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
The town of Lisbon is one of roughly a dozen school districts in the state starting the year without a new budget in place. The schools there will have to operate under last year's budget, which provides nearly $500,000 less than what the district is seeking. Maddie Smith visited Gartley Street School in Lisbon to see how teachers are preparing for the year ahead.
It's just days before school starts, and special education teacher Suzanne Nelson is in her classroom, ensuring her files are updated for her combined group of elementary-aged kids.
Prepping in this program is knowing what I want to do, knowing what I need to accomplish, having it all planned out, but not set in stone, because my day is determined by them when they walk in.
But Nelson's plan will have to include an extra challenge this year, as she and her colleagues will operate without a new budget, and that makes her nervous.
Everybody knows teachers buy their own supplies when budgets get tight. Well, the budget's tight. And I'm not going to be buying all those school supplies. I'm keeping my own personal budget tight.
Lisbon isn't the only district that has failed to pass a school budget by September. Voters in Fort Kent, Kennebunk, and Searsport have also refused to go along with requested spending increases in their town ballots. Searsport Superintendent Laura Miller says the driving issue is taxes, even though the school district's budget represented just a 2% increase over last year.
When you look at a tax bill and it says that the greatest percentage, which is usually between 60 and 70% of the bill, goes to education, that seems to be where people get stuck.
Residents in Lisbon are facing a major tax increase of nearly 20% because of a municipal accounting error. And some believe the school system has become the scapegoat for voter frustration and anger.
I want to apologize to y'all that you and your school budget have been the victim of what has been a very clear outcry from the public regarding the municipal side of the house.
At a school budget meeting in June after the initial vote, town councilor Norm Albert was among the many community members who encouraged the school committee to stand firm on their funding request and resubmit the same spending plan to voters in August.
I have zero interest on balancing the budget issues that we have right now on the backs of our children in this community. I do not intend to change one iota, dollar, or anything in the budget that you propose, and I look forward to seeing it again in a few weeks.
But a few weeks later, voters again made it very clear. Their tax bills are the issue.
Taxes are high enough, everything's going up, and it's just a burden I can't bear.
Melissa Cody of Lisbon Falls said it feels like she pays more each year, while town services continue to be cut. And the school budget has to be a part of the solution.
Certainly, I don't want to be or have it a detriment to our children. Certainly, they are the future, but it is something that needs to be balanced out.
The measure failed again by almost 300 votes. 2 weeks later, school committee member Leonard Lednum warned residents that because the town's tax rate would likely be approved, voting down the school budget would have no effect on the higher tax burden.
So if you're mad that the town is getting too much of your money, this isn't the way to stop that.
Without a budget, state law dictates that Lisbon must operate under the most recent spending plan approved through referendum. Superintendent Richard Green says that's almost $600,000 less than what he proposed for this year. For the town's third vote sometime this fall, Green is proposing a curtailed version that's $120,000 less than the two that have been rejected. Back at the Gartley Street School, special ed teacher Suzanne Nelson is focused on getting the school year underway.
We can't do anything about it this year, so we're just trying to buckle down and get through it.
The public hearing for Lisbon's third proposed school budget is scheduled for next Tuesday, September 2nd. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
A soccer player with a semi-professional team in Lewiston has been arrested by ICE and is being detained at a facility in Massachusetts. And it's causing fear and confusion for teammates and friends. Malunda Destino had stopped at a gas station in Scarborough last week when several ICE agents approached his car, according to a friend who says she later spoke to him from jail. The friend, Shwazi Nyemba, says Destino told her the agents knocked on his car window and told him, in no uncertain terms, to step out.
Come out or we're going to break the window.
Nyemba says when she and other friends learned of Destino's arrest, they scrambled to locate him, even going to the ICE office in Scarborough, only to find he'd already been taken out of state.
They was like, oh no, he's not here anymore. They moved him to Massachusetts.
Nyemba says she first met Destino in 2022 when he was living at a shelter in Portland and she was volunteering to help new arrivals. She says they became fast friends, bonding over a shared love of food, dance, and music. Nyemba says she was shocked by his arrest.
It doesn't do anything to hurt people. He's always a good person. He loves to support people. He doesn't know how to say no to people.
Destino is currently being held at a correctional facility in Plymouth, Massachusetts, according to ICE's online detainee locator system. Immigration court records show a judge issued a removal order for Destino in 2023, but that an appeal for that case is pending. A spokesperson for ICE did not return Maine Public's request for comment by airtime, but told the Portland Press Herald that Destino will be held in ICE custody until there's a decision in his appeal. In the meantime, Destino's loss is hitting home for his semi-professional soccer team, the Lewiston-based Maine Legends FC.
The whole situation, is creating chaos in the club.
Captain Manuel Vemba says in addition to his skill on the pitch as a defender, Destino brought a sense of joy to the game and also stepped up to mentor kids through the team's youth soccer academy.
He's like how motivated in the team. He's always smiling, making everybody laugh, telling stories.
Now, Vemba says a sense of fear has crept into the club, especially for other immigrant players.
Some players are even scared to come to practice because they feared, they may get targeted.
Others, he says, are reluctant to travel to away games out of state. Vemba says the team is raising money to help support Destino's pregnant girlfriend while he's in custody. Another group, Project Relief, is raising money for his legal fees. For Destino's friend, Shwazi Nyemba, his arrest is emblematic of the broader impacts on immigrant communities as more and more people get swept up in President Trump's mass deportation push.
We came here for peace, so we want to have that peace. Stop hurting people's family, because this is hurting people's family.
For now, she says, she just wants her friend to come home. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.